Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome this Monday, January 21st, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman, who's not feeling well. And we're hoping and praying that he will be back in the captain's chair tomorrow. Joining me in studio, Fred Jackson for One News Now, and Walker Wildman, Vice President of Operations here for American Family Association. Guys, good morning.
Yeah, good to be in a nice warm studio.
Yeah, because some places up north, I was looking at Drudge Report. They were talking about some places 40 below wind chill factor.
That's cold.
That's cold. I don't care if you are a Yankee. That is cold weather.
In the 20s in the south is also very, very cold.
Which is where we are today. So, yeah, cold weather, and it's winter. This is the way it kind of should be. So, hey, listen, before we get to the news of the day, I do want to mention the fact that today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It is a federal holiday signed into law by President Ronald Reagan in 1983 to celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He's the famous American Baptist minister and activist. The holiday, I didn't know this as I was doing a little bit of background on this, is the third Monday in January each year because that is around Dr. King's birthday, which is January 15th. Dr. King became the face of the civil rights movement from 1954 until he was assassinated in Memphis in 1968. Now, later on, as the civil rights movement kind of got underway, some arose in that civil rights movement and advocated a more controversial, more confrontational style, I should say. Some would even say violent. Dr. King was especially famous, though, for his Bible beliefs and advocacy of nonviolence and civil disobedience as the way to point America to a more just racial field, I guess you could say. I do want to make a personal, I just say a comment, and this is my own personal statement. So this does not represent AFA or AFR. I did want to make a kind of a personal statement about Dr. King. The first part might be a little bit controversial, but I hope to get past that later on. But anyway, this is what I wanted to say. Some people are critical of Dr. King, stating that some of his theological views were not evangelical and claiming that he was not faithful to his wife. I don't know enough about those matters to answer those criticisms, but my take on these issues is the same as my beliefs about the founding fathers of this republic. A lot of those founding fathers, not all of them were Christians. Not all of those who were could claim to be exemplary Christians. What I want to know is this. Were they used by God to do something important in support of the truth of Scripture? And with that in mind, I have no problem saying that Dr. Martin Luther King was a courageous Christian and minister who fought the right fight at the right time in the right way. And it is good that our nation honors his just and righteous battle to point America in the direction that I believe God wanted us to go. Our prayers should be that we continue on that path. So, that's my personal statement. Again, I just read it to you guys just before the start of the show. I consider Dr. Martin Luther King, I was going to say a prophet. I use that in a non-biblical way for those who are Bible snipers and say, well, there are no more prophets or whatever. He pointed this country in the right direction, and I do want to honor that without having to get into arguments about whether he was a perfect man. Because apparently he was not. Again, I don't know if the accusations are true or not. I'm not a perfect man, and you know, you can look at presidents like Ronald Reagan and people that we admire, and you say that they're not perfect, but God sometimes uses them, including the current occupant of the White House, guys. I mean, some people, even in the Christian community, will say, well, you can't support President Trump because X, Y, or Z. And I say, listen, those things may be true. Maybe they are true. Right. Some of those accusations are true. But I want to know, is God using the president to accomplish things that are good?
Right.
And so,
you know, in the days of such division, I think we all need to look back, and especially the modern day Democrats and liberals, at how Martin Luther King voiced his opposition to certain things, you know, because in the days of of interrupting Senate speeches in chamber in different committee rooms when Supreme Court nominees are trying to speak, you know, being shouted and drug out by the police and banging on the Supreme Court door the day after Brett Kavanaugh was sworn in.
Right.
I mean, all this unrest and this physical violence that we've seen going on in our country, it would be helpful for sure to look back at and see how Dr. King did it.
Well, Fred, some of the stories we've got kind of highlight the division that's in our country and the fact that you almost can't get a word in edgewise or stand for anything without the left being very confrontational. So our first story kind of highlights that.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, too, Alveda King is Dr. King's niece.
Yes.
And, you know, I think she was making the point on the weekend, and I was thinking about this, that he would have supported the March for Life.
Right.
That took place. He would not have supported the Women's March that took place also this weekend in D.C. and other places.
Pro-abortion.
Exactly. Yeah. And some have said, you know, the civil rights issue of the day is the killing of our unborn in this country.
Many of those in the black community.
Yes, very much
which
so.
Which is something that Dr. Alveda King, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. feels very strongly about. And she also fights tirelessly for racial reconciliation.
Absolutely. But the March for Life, an incredible event, as it always has been now for a number of years. You know, I always watch the way the mainstream media, I was going to say, covers it. Most of them don't.
Right.
But one of the mainstream media said there are just over 1,000 people showed up. Give me a break. Just look at the videos.
Yeah.
You're talking tens of thousands of people, many of them young people
yes.
from across this country, showing up to be part and to fight. We want to mention Vice President Pence was at the event with his wife, and President Trump spoke by video. Probably the most pro-life president that this country has seen in many, many years.
Right.
But there's also, as you were alluding to a moment ago, a sad story that came out of the March for Life. There was a group of young people from Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky, and they were there to show their support for the unborn. They were part of the March for Life, but they became a big story on the weekend when an initial video gave the impression that these young people from this Catholic school who were there were being nasty to a Native American Indian person, chief, who was there. The picture showed him beating a drum in front of them.
And claiming that the students had surrounded this
right. Surrounded him.
Like a mob.
And then also there was a group that called themselves Black Hebrew Israelite. They're members of, and there's only four or five of them. And by the way, you don't mistake them as supporting the nation of Israel. You do a little bit of history research on them. They believe they are descendants of Jews.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The indication was that there was racial tension involving these two groups, the Catholic school and this black group. But that is not the case at all. Here's what happened. A second video came out, and that's the way the mainstream media reported the initial event based on that initial video.
In fact, that reporting was so accusatory towards the students from the Catholic school that the principal was considering suspending the students.
Based on the first video?
Yes.
Right.
All right. So I guess we should not be surprised at all that when a second video came out, it told a totally different story. I want to play you a couple of cuts here to try to give you a feeling for what was happening there. Before reporting the new video, this is ABC News, called into question just how this encounter began and what, if anything, students actually said or did. ABC reported on the backlash of the boys' behavior. It's cut number 8.
Videos of the encounter shared widely on social media. Swift backlash against the behavior of those Kentucky teens who traveled to Washington this past Friday on a school trip to attend the March for Life. The Diocese of Covington Catholic High School, where some of the boys attend, condemning their actions, saying in a statement, "This behavior is opposed to the church's teachings of dignity and respect. The matter is being investigated, and we will take appropriate action, up to and including expulsion."
Now, that's how ABC reported that. But then again, as we say, the section, actual video, came out in context. Cut number 4. Let's have a listen.
That's right. Here come Gant. Here come Gant. Here comes Guy. Look at our Make America Great Again hats. Look at the hats. Look at the hats.
Right. We ain't taking that, what they're making. Some of these kids had Make America Great hats. And really, I MAGA. Think those hats on. Yeah, MAGA hats. But the young gentleman, Nick Sandman, who became the center of this, he's one of the kids from the college. He says, here's what happened. He says, the students were confronted by four members of this Black Hebrew Israelite movement who called us racist bigots and went on and on from there. And they also taunted an African-American student from the school, telling him that he would, this spokesman for the Black Hebrew group, he said he would harvest his organs. He was upset there was a young Black kid part of this Catholic school.
So in essence, threatening to kill him and yes. take his organs.
Yes.
To sell him.
And then it turns out the native Indian gentleman who was there, he was the actual one that approached the young people beating his drum. So it's when the second video came out, it told the whole story of what happened. So what's sad is that the school was willing to believe the first initial report that came out, like that one that we just heard from ABC. But when the whole truth was told, it was a totally different story. These kids were there for the March for Life. They were confronted by this Black Hebrew group and then this Native Indian leader who were not part of the March for Life. But, you know, secular media being what it is today, I'm sure they saw those Make America Great Again hats on some of these kids. Here was an opportunity, and they were going to take it.
You know, Walker, I was looking at some of the video. These high school kids, and again, we're talking about Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky. And Nick Sandman, you're mentioning Fred, kind of became the center of this storm. But they, looking at the video, they behaved themselves appropriately.
Right.
They were not confrontational. They weren't shouting things back. And really, they were just kind of caught in the middle of this, and the media so distorted the truth
yes.
that we go back to what we were talking about just moments ago. It is becoming increasingly difficult for Americans to trust the mainstream media
right.
for anything
right.
regarding truth.
Yeah, you know, this first off, I'm not sure how it's become the norm for media outlets to report as if they were there. Usually you need a journalist there or an affiliate journalist there or even a witness, an eyewitness, where you get their account of what happened. But the media now, it's very common practice to report on a 60-second video.
Yes.
You run a 1,200-word news story on a 60-second video with no other commentary, with no other input from somebody who was there. And that's what these media outlets did. They ran the story without any firsthand knowledge of the situation. And it turns out the student group, they were waiting on their bus to come pick them up to return to their home state of Kentucky. And then this guy, this Native American, I guess he is, who knows where he's from, came up with the drum, beating the drum in the kid's face. And so...
And these high school kids were being taunted.
Yes, that's what's inflammatory, is beating a drum in a 16-year-old's face. But the media got it all wrong, and this is why when folks read CNN stories and MSNBC stories, they don't trust them.
Well, Nick Sandman, who's the junior at Covington Catholic High School, said, quote, that he was, quote, mortified that so many people have come to believe something that did not happen, that students from my school were chanting or acting in a racist fashion toward African Americans or Native Americans. I did not do that, do not have hateful feelings in my heart, and did not witness any of my classmates doing that, end quote. And Walker, that goes to your point. Neither did CNN
right.
and neither did MSNBC, but they reported, or ABC, they reported that happened when it wasn't in fact true.
Well, it's really kind of interesting. The Associated Press this morning, in its latest report on this, the Native American we've been talking about, his name is Nathan Phillips. He has now told the AP he approached the Kentucky students to keep the peace between them and the third group of protesters. This Black Hebrew group. So they didn't confront him. He came between the two.
But he was, I looked at the video, he was pounding that drum
oh, yes,
in
was.
Nick Sandman's face.
Yes. Exactly right, because the students began to chant one of their college chants or whatever the case may be, and there was some kind of accusation that they were mocking him because of that. But that's not the case either.
Right.
So it's really this running story. Steve Jordahl, a reporter, just came in, and this is the brother of one of the Catholic school kid. He's just talking about the threats now his family has been facing online because of this, because people are believing that first video
right.
and the first reports that are out there. So this is really getting out of hand. And what it goes to, and you guys have alluded to this, this comes in the wake of the whole BuzzFeed story going back to late last week. That's the story where BuzzFeed begins to report that the president, President Trump, told his lawyer at the time, Michael Cohen, to lie to the American people about his dealings with regards to, I think, the hotel in Moscow or whatever the case may be. The Mueller team investigating alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians had to come out, I think it was on Friday, and say the BuzzFeed report is not quite accurate because the mainstream media and the Democrats were reporting it as absolute truth. And then, you know, Adam Schiff, one of the main critics of the president, despite the fact now that the Mueller team came out and said, well, no, the report is not accurate, right. The BuzzFeed report, cut number 12, he says, well, I still want to investigate it. Cut number 12.
I assume that this was prompted by the reaction to that BuzzFeed report, but also it may have to do with the special counsel's wanting to be able to use Michael Cohen as a witness in further prosecutions and wanted to make sure that the public didn't have the perception that he was saying more than he was saying, at least to the special counsel. But, Margaret, I think we need to pay particular attention to what we do know from the special counsel that was not included in the statement yesterday. What we do know from the special counsel is that Michael Cohen has shared information about core matters of the Russian investigation that he learned from people associated with the Trump organization, the business organization. We also know from the special counsel that he has shared information about his communications with people associated with the White House during 2017 and 2018. Now, it was that period during 2017 and 2018 that Michael Cohen was making false statements publicly and to Congress and initially the special counsel about the Trump Tower deal.
So there you have it. Michael Cohen was talking to people associated with, and maybe something was said there. But that has nothing to do with the BuzzFeed story at all. So he wants to keep this narrative going that somehow the president probably coaxed Michael Cohen into lying to the American public, when the Mueller team now says, no, that is not accurate.
Well, the fact of the matter is that, and of course, Adam Schiff has been a constant, talk about drumbeats, a constant yes. critic of the president. Now, I have very little doubt that Robert Mueller probably wants to protect Michael Cohen in terms of whatever else he may have planned for his report or other prosecutions. But that's got nothing to do with what the Mueller team said about the BuzzFeed article. This is their quote. This is a statement released. BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. So regardless of whether or not they want to protect Michael Cohen as a potential witness, they're saying the BuzzFeed story is wrong.
Right.
And so Adam Schiff, you know, whatever he wants to say and imply, and he's implying that Michael Cohen, well, maybe BuzzFeed got it wrong about this, but there's other stuff Michael Cohen has we're pretty sure are going to be, damning to the president. So to me, this goes to the heart of kind of what we're talking about. The left is kind of in a bloodlust. They just want the head of the president. Mm-hmm. And it's like the French Revolution, they're going to be cutting people's heads off at the guillotine, regardless of whether or not they're guilty.
Right.
They want the president's head.
To believe this BuzzFeed story, first off, when I read it, I thought BuzzFeed, aren't they the ones that reported on the fake dossier?
Yes.
And they faced an $11 million defamation lawsuit over it, which they actually won because of the broadness of the First Amendment. But this whole idea that, do they think Trump's an idiot? The whole idea that the sitting president is dumb enough to tell his personal lawyer to lie to Congress, and what's it called when you lie to Congress under oath?
Oh, perjury. Yeah.
Yeah. So they think that Donald Trump is dumb enough to tell his personal lawyer to perjure himself before Congress. Trump would never. No smart person would tell their personal lawyer to lie to Congress. They may tell him to not give a full answer or plead the fifth. But and then the second story about the whole Trump Tower deal in Moscow. So what? Bill Clinton's getting $500,000 checks from Moscow, while his wife, the Secretary of State, is selling America's uranium to Moscow. So this whole idea that you can't have any connection to a foreign country, that has apparently not been an issue up until now.
Well, and besides, my understanding is the accusation that there was a deal for a Trump Tower in Moscow, I'm not sure if that's true or not, even if it was, to right. your point, he at the time was a candidate. And there's
right.
nothing illegal.
And he's also a businessman.
Is nothing illegal with continuing your business
right.
while you're running for president? Then there wouldn't be. Then if you win, which candidate Trump eventually did,
right?
Then you have to kind of sequester those kinds of deals and separate yourself from it. And there's no indication that the president didn't do that. So
right.
the accusation that he had a business deal going in Moscow is a big fat.
And,
so what?
And assuming he did have a deal going, it never happened. There's
right.
no Trump Tower in Moscow.
Right.
So
here's a scary thought, and get your reaction to this. I do not believe that the Democrats in their hearts, I do not believe that they think what they are telling the public is the facts. I believe people like Adam Schiff, I believe they're telling distortions to the American people. And that's a scary thought. When you have lawmakers in this country who are going before the cameras and misleading people.
And they know there's holes in their stories.
And they know there's holes in their stories.
Right.
Well, look at it this way. How else, other than blind hatred for Donald Trump and a desire to have his head?
Yes.
Okay. How else do you explain the fact that Democrats, even recently, under the Obama administration, we're in favor of a wall, we're in favor of all these things, and now the president says, listen, I just want some funding, not even all of it, for the wall, and I'm willing to give you some of the things you've been pressing for a decade,
yeah.
even back to the Bush 43 administration, and the Democrats are saying, no way, we're not giving you anything because we want to see you crash and burn.
Yeah.
Even stuff we were in favor of just a few years ago, we're going to say no to it because we want to see you crash and burn.
Right.
To me, that is blind hatred of this president, and it is coloring everything that they're saying, and the same with the media.
Mm-hmm.
And the media is already in trouble with the American public.
Right.
The Democrats risk the same thing if they're not
yeah,
careful.
Yeah, I think it was Jeffrey Toobin on CNN, a CNN commentator over the weekend or on Friday, after this whole BuzzFeed fiasco happened, and I don't know how anybody believes anything that BuzzFeed puts out, even if it's accurate. But Jeffrey Toobin, the CNN commentator, said this BuzzFeed story being false reinforces the idea that us media folks are a bunch of left-wing Democrats. And he's exactly right.
Amen to that.
Yeah. And how many news stories are out there? Somebody raise this question. How many news stories are out there that haven't been rebutted that are absolutely false?
Yeah.
How many stories are out there that are absolutely false, but nobody has the evidence to prove them false?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. And when we return, we're going to have a special guest, Dr. Michael Newton Keyes. He has written a book, Unbelievable is the title, subtitled Seven Myths About the History and Future of Science and Religion. We'll also cover more news stories of things that are happening in America and around the world. So short break, and we will be right back.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
He dreams that the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together. I don't think Martin Luther King would be happy with the stoking of racial division that we see currently in our country.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News reporters.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You can't squeeze more into 3 days, and we will, in Washington, D.C. on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and in September. We're going to the Capitol, Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, that's outside, Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and we're going to Mount Vernon on that Saturday of our tour. So much to see, so much to do, and it includes lectures and talks from Stephen McDowell, who will be our historian along the way. For more information on these June or September Spiritual Heritage Tours and the separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, for all the information on this, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Stearns from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Vice President Mike Pence is defending a Christian school where his wife teaches art. Karen Pence works at Emmanuel Christian School in Virginia, the school under attack because they require staffers to support traditional marriage. LGBT activists say the rules are anti-gay. A CNN columnist called the school un-American, soulless.
This criticism of Christian education in America should stop.
The vice president was a guest on the Catholic television network, EWTN.
To see major news organizations attacking Christian education is deeply offensive to us. I mean, we have a rich tradition in America of Christian education and, frankly, religious education broadly defined.
The vice president is right to call out this blatant anti-Christian bigotry. CNN calls that un-American, but in reality, freedom to practice one's faith is the essence of being American. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. Walker, let our listeners know if they're of a mind to and would like to see our beautiful faces on screen. How can they do that?
Yeah, a couple ways to keep up with the show on the internet. The first way is our website, afr.net. And when you get to our website, you can either, one, listen live, or you can go back and listen to past shows using the podcast link. And then, of course, we're on social media, Facebook and YouTube. They haven't blocked us yet, so we're still on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show and catch the news stories.
All right. We want to welcome a special guest to the program, Michael Newton Keys. He has written a new book, Unbelievable, 7 Myths About the History and Future of Science and Religion. He is qualified to write this book and to talk to us about it today. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, a former Fulbright scholar. He holds a PhD in the history of science from the University of Oklahoma, serves as a lecturer in the history and philosophy of science at Biola University. Dr. Keys, welcome to Today's Issues.
I'm talking to Ed right now, right?
You are talking to Ed, yes, sir.
And friend, Walker and Fred, right?
That's correct. That is correct.
Well done.
All right. Join the three of you.
Well, hey, listen, thank you for being on with us. I'm not sure there's any issue that is probably more controversial than the intersection or the complete distinction between religion and science. A lot of Christians don't know what to do with science. They believe they're faithful to the scriptures and their Christian beliefs. Does that mean they can have anything to do with science? Are they compromising if they go into, science as a field? Tell us kind of just an oversight maybe of this conflict that is going on, because we've got all these popularizers of science that say religion is anti-science. Is that true?
There is definitely a perceived conflict, but I would argue that it's largely constructed out of false presuppositions and a lot of wishful thinking by materialists who want to tell the story that science and religion, well, they've been at war for a long, long time, and science always wins, so better ditch religion and go with what Bill Nye, the science guy, says is the right way to go, which is, to embrace a world that is without any inherent purpose, and you just create your own purpose.
Yeah, and that is becoming a kind of one of the foundational beliefs of those in the West and in this country. You can create your own reality from everything from gender to sexuality, all those things. You have that view kind of seeping into the culture wars. Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Keyes. You mentioned Bill Nye, the science guy, and Stephen Hawking, Carl Sagan, Christopher Hitchens, the new atheists. They have gotten an awful lot of publicity, written best-selling books, and their main argument is that science is based on facts, religion slash faith is built on just that. It's based and built on faith, which is you believe things without facts. So how can there be overlap for a Christian who believes, that faith is of critical importance? We believe, in that which we cannot see. How can there be any intersection then between science and our faith?
Good question. I debunk 7 common stories that make it look like Christianity is anti-science. But then I also tell the positive story in the second part of the book. I give a case study of the famous astronomer Johannes Kepler, who, based on his Christian belief in a supernatural creation of the cosmos, he was confident that he could discover mathematically elegant natural laws given or issued by the maximally rational lawgiver, God. And he actually discovered 3 laws of planetary motion that are still in astronomy textbooks today. So that there's a case where faith came first, faith in God, and then scientific reasoning issued from that and produced some of the most enduring scientific discoveries of the past 4 centuries. So that faith itself, his prior Christian faith, was itself not devoid of reason, because like Christians in the historic Judeo-Christian tradition, ever since Jesus, the Jew that changed Judaism by introducing himself as the Son of God, his resurrection was witnessed by many eyewitness people who saw him. And so this enabled people to give historical arguments for centuries since that there are good reasons to believe in the resurrection and therefore in the divinity of Christ and the authority of Scripture, since he affirmed Scripture. So faith and reason are not at odds. They go together. Faith can inform reason, and reason can inform faith.
Our guest, the voice you're listening to, is Dr. Michael Newton Keyes. He's the author of the book we're discussing, Unbelievable, 7 Myths About the History and Future of Science and Religion. Dr. Keyes is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. Fred?
Dr. Keyes, Fred here. I think one of the interesting examples you give where there's not a conflict between science and the Bible is the whole issue of who said it first that the Earth is actually round. Where'd that come from? Christopher Columbus?
Well, that's what we're still taught in grammar school today, is that those stupid Christians in the Middle Ages thought it was flat until Columbus came around in 1492 and sailed west to get to the Far East and showed it was round. Well, look, in Columbus Day, the real issue was not the shape of the Earth. It was the size of the Earth. And there was legitimate debate about how big the Earth is and what proportion of that surface is occupied by land versus sea, which would affect the journey. So, the people that he was debating with to try to get funding all agreed that it was a spherically shaped, a round Earth. So where did it come from? You go clear back to the ancient world, the idea of a flat Earth, or excuse me, of a arguments against this ladder for a spherical earth came from especially Aristotle. There were some others before him, but one argument that he came up with that was available throughout early Christianity, throughout the Middle Ages, was this one. Look up at the moon during a lunar eclipse. You'll see the shadow of Earth cast on the moon, eclipsing or covering it up, and as it progressively covers up the surface of the moon, you'll see the edge of that shadow is curved. So the object casting that shadow, Earth, is also a rounded object. So, yeah, it was available throughout the Middle Ages. And by the way, guys, guess who invented the very idea of a university? Christians. And guess what they taught in that university? About a third of the curriculum was science, including arguments like the one I just gave for a round globe, Earth.
Fascinating.
Walker, okay. Dr. Hees, let me just ask you this. There's a kind of a new myth, if you will, being positioned by those in the secular community, scientific community, to replace religion, because it becomes clear to anybody who's honest about human civilization and cultures that religion's not going anywhere. I mean, the more secular the world becomes, the more religion seems to spread. So those secular forces, scientific forces, have to have something that they hope to use to replace religion in the hearts and minds of people. And you talk about kind of a futuristic myth that sounds scientific but isn't. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Sure, glad to. So what I do in my book is, after I cover these six historic myths, including the one I just covered, what has happened historically is, when people bought into those historic myths and thought that a religious basis for human significance is not credible, well, that left a significant void. And that is now being filled by the seventh futuristic myth, which I call the extraterrestrial enlightenment myth. And it goes like this. Any alien capable of making the vast distance to Earth, by traveling through space, would have to have what Dawkins, the famous atheist, called godlike superintelligence, technology indistinguishable from magic, and moral spiritual insights that would trigger global religious reorientation. Now, there are components of this that do sound scientific, but do you want me to give you a brief response to this argument?
Sure. We've got about 2 minutes to 3 minutes. If you can do that,
okay,
in that amount of time, that'd be great.
Sure. So response would be, look, as we have discovered about 4,000 extra solar planets, that is, planets outside our solar system, there are still no really habitable planets for complex life like humans. And so if you go to even vaster distances in space, to even the most remotely habitable, possibly habitable planet, we're talking such distances that, it's very unlikely, given that the universe is expanding and so on, a lot of other factors, that we would ever be encountered by an alien. But here's the real kicker. According to Richard Dawkins and others of this materialistic mindset, if the devil himself were to appear on Earth posing as an alien savior, Dawkins and his like-minded atheists would have no way to help other people distinguish the natural explanation, an alien, from the supernatural explanation, the devil. Because their own literature says that you extrapolate into the future billions of years that these aliens had to evolve before us, they would be, their technology would be like magic. And so what this has done is it's left humanity wide open to massive deception into believing that, what this appearance of this great creature that might solve some of the world's problems, they're left to fit it into the materialistic framework, and they have no way to distinguish it from the truly supernatural. So latter-day materialism is becoming indistinguishable from the occult, and that is ironic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like you said, it's very, very dangerous. And, to your point, every time you have a conversation, every time I do, with someone who's an atheist, or at least, agnostic, and they, you're talking about these, these vast differences, the distances, trillions of miles we're talking about. What is it, a light year is like almost 6 trillion miles. So you get, a million light years away. You're talking about such vast distances. It seems absolutely impossible to me that a biological entity could traverse in a lifetime those distances. But what these atheists will say is, well, but they'll have technology that allows them to do it. And to your point, that's like saying, well, they'll do it by magic. And there's no right. distinction between those. And there cannot be, because you're talking about the possibilities of technologies of which we have no conception. So you kind of go round and round in a circle with folks, and then they'll make fun of us and they'll say, well, everything you believe is based on faith. And they have faith that that some alien's going to find a wormhole somewhere and be able to make it to our planet in one piece. Dr. Keyes, these are fascinating issues. We are out of time. But if folks want to learn more about some of the things you've been talking about, again, we're talking to Michael Newton Keyes. He's written the book, Unbelievable, 7 Myths About the History and Future of Science and Religion. Dr. Keyes, let people know where they can get a copy of this book and how they can read more of your stuff at the website, your own personal website or Discovery Institute, either one.
Yeah, go to unbelievablemyth.com, and myth is plural, and that takes you right to the Amazon page to buy.
Okay. All right, Dr. Keyes, thank you so much for being on with us, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks, guys. Nice to visit.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Fascinating mm-hmm. stuff, and I've never been very scientifically adept. History and, theology were more my, kind of bailiwick. So my hat's off to Christians who go into science mm-hmm. and will do the hard work, mathematics same way, mm-hmm. engineering. Those people are always amazing to me because it's a whole different.
Here's what I find fascinating. My academic background is in biology and chemistry.
Okay.
And one time I thought about going to med school, so that's my academic background.
We could have been saying Dr. Jackson.
Could have been, yeah. Not sure you want me. But anyway, what's interesting, some of my courses were developmental biology, where you take a really close look at the cell. And what's fascinating, and you look at the human body, the closer you look at things, the more you have to come to the conclusion there was a designer.
Because the closer you look, even at simple creatures, the more complex you find they
yes.
are.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating when you look at the cell and you look at, there's protons and neutrons inside this cell and they're balanced with the electrons on the outside, yeah. just how it's structured. When you look at the human skin and the three levels of the human skin and how it breathes, most people, when you talk about human organs, you don't think of the skin. The skin is an organ. And it's just absolutely fascinating. You put it under a microscope, and this could not happen mm-hmm. accidentally. It's right. impossible. When you look and you study the human brain, when you look at what it takes to, in your brain, to pick up a pen.
Yes.
All that has to happen with and the chemistry, the muscles contracting, and all of those sorts of things, potassium ions here, and the reason that you have the chemistry of the human body is just absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. And for someone to say, "Oh, it just all happened by accident,"
yeah,
right.
That is harder to believe.
It is.
Than the belief that, no, there was a designer.
And that's the basic argument they're making, that it all happened by accident. One of the things that just, and I know we're kind of leaving the world of politics for a moment, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Is animal behavior, too, and the behavior of things a lot less complex than human beings. And I remember reading this book, this was back in the 80s, and it was from a evolutionary perspective. Mm-hmm. But they were talking about animal behavior, and there was some out in the Pacific, some type of crab that is born in the ocean. And then what they do is, when they're born, they come out of the ocean, go up on the sand, and go up into these palm trees. And that's where they live their lives. And then they go back to the ocean to spawn and all that thing. And I was thinking, even the scientist was raising this issue about how this is a puzzle. How do these, we're talking crabs. We're not talking about human beings with a brain and the ability to reason. How do all these crabs know they're supposed to go to these palm trees?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do they just follow the crab next to them? I'm going wherever he's going. Yeah. Why would they even think that they're supposed to leave the water. And so you look at animal behavior. Remember John Piper, the pastor, I guess now he's pastor emeritus up in Bethel Baptist Church up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But he was saying there's a species of spider that its entire life is lived suspended over a plant that devours insects.
Yeah.
And what this spider does is it hangs there and waits to capture bugs that might go into this this plant, mm-hmm. and that's all it does.
Yeah.
And if that plant didn't exist, what would this spider do? That kind of thing is just mind-boggling. And I understand there's things about the Christian faith that people who are scientifically minded but who have not been regenerated, haven't been born again, they find faith puzzling as well because they just don't, their heart has not been changed. I understand that, but to not see that what you believe, atheist, is just as puzzling and just as hard to comprehend as anything else, to at least show a little humility in that.
And the violation of basic scientific tenets that goes on under the guise of research today.
Right.
Because when, and I'm talking about tenets like you do an experiment and, or you make a hypothesis and you design an experiment, you have to be able to prove that.
Right.
But we're teaching evolution today as if it's fact. How do you do an experiment that repeats evolution?
Right.
Or the I call the myth of evolution that's out there. Evolution within the species, fine. But evolution that says, you know, we came from an amoeba.
Yeah.
You can't even begin. Show me in the lab that.
Yeah. And the most blatant defying of science in modern day America is the whole abortion debate.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone who has sat by a ultrasound knows that after about 8 to 10 days, you can hear a heartbeat.
That's right.
Right.
From the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about science. We want to use science to base public policy on. Well, let's start basing public policy that life begins. First, it begins at conception. The heartbeat begins 7 to 10 days after conception, mm-hmm. which is way before the vast majority of people know they're pregnant.
Yeah, and let's we won't do it. But you want to talk about science? Then let's talk about science when it comes to the transgender movement.
There you go.
Okay, so you want another don't say that we're the ones who are anti-science.
Right.
So. Yeah. All right, Fred, we've got 7 minutes or so left. What kind of stories you got remaining there in your
hopper? Need to go back to the weekend again. You know, mostly on the weekend, you're watching TV, you're waiting for the football game or the hockey game or whatever.
Right.
But President Trump chose Saturday afternoon around 4 o'clock Eastern time to address the nation about his latest proposal to end the government shutdown and secure our southern border. And once again, the president was offering a compromise. He offered to extend protections for so-called DACAs. Those are the kids who came in with their parents who entered the country illegally. And he offered to extend, I think, up to 3 years or so, a time when they find a pathway to becoming legal in this country. And also for those who are here under a temporary permit and that kind of thing. So there he was with the olive branch once again. But even before he went on the air, there was some media that were reporting what he was going to say. And Nancy Pelosi issued a statement saying it's no way. And so on and on it goes. I want to play you a little excerpt from what the president had to say on Saturday afternoon and then play you a interview that was done with a Democrat on the weekend with regards to the legitimacy of a wall. Cut number 10.
We believe in a safe and lawful system of immigration, one that upholds our laws, our traditions, and our most cherished values. Unfortunately, our immigration system has been badly broken for a very long time. Over the decades, many presidents and many lawmakers have come and gone, and no real progress has been made on immigration. We are now living with the consequences, and they are tragic, brought about by decades of political stalemate, partisan gridlock, and national neglect.
Well, there he is. That's the president kind of laying out the problem. And everything he said was true there.
Right.
He, you know, he wasn't blaming Democrats and saying Republicans and all of us been right.
This is a nonpartisan boondoggle.
Right.
Both parties have messed up the immigration.
Both parties. He says he's trying to fix it. But you have to stop the problem at the border first. And it's well documented. The problems of a porous southern border are leading to drugs into this country. Obviously, people entering the country illegally, some of them violent. And he's, you know, that is
No doubt, terrorists.
Terrorists that coming in. So, I mean, those are the facts. But Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in the Senate, the Democrat leader in the Senate, right away, no deal. It doesn't matter what this president does. Remember, this president first was wanting $25 billion for the wall.
Right.
He's knocked that back to $5.7 billion.
Right.
There are Democrats on the weekend like Benny Thompson, who I wouldn't put in the conservative wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
Congressman Benny Thompson from Mississippi. Here's what he had to say about the idea of the president asking for more security, extending a wall, a barrier that's already there. Cut number 11.
Democrats historically have supported certain barriers, certain other things to protect this country. We will sit with the chief, the president, or whomever, and we'll work through it.
So you wouldn't rule out a wall?
I would not rule out a wall in certain instances. Now, the notion that we can't have barriers is just something that's not true.
I'm not for a wall. I'm not for a wall. I'm not for a wall.
That was that Nancy Pelosi at the last part. I'm not for a wall. Not for a wall. No, no. What she's against is giving the president a victory.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She's just adamant against that. You know, Democrats are blaming President Trump for extending the shutdown. The shutdown could end tomorrow.
Right.
By simply this $5.7 billion, which is 0.11, did you
right.
say, Walker?
Yes.
Percent of the federal budget.
Less than 0.1% of the federal budget.
So there he is. The president actually has conservatives upset with him, what he had to say on Saturday.
Right.
Because they say, well, he's offering amnesty to the DACA people.
You know, for 30 or 40 years, both of the parties, Democrats and Republicans, have been blaming each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Democrats say the Republicans don't want to come to the negotiating table because they don't want to give amnesty. Republicans say Democrats don't want to come to the negotiating table because they don't want to secure the border. Well, this proves that it's a multi-party problem. It's both parties are to blame, and they've been playing this political blame game on purpose, knowing that neither one of them want to solve the problem. But they blame it on each other. Finally, President Trump, the adult, comes to the table and says, look, I'll give both parties what they want. And then, the Republicans are actually willing to negotiate here. But the Democrats say, no, we don't even want to negotiate. We don't even want to give amnesty.
I would say kudos to Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson
yeah.
for saying the obvious. Yes. There's nothing wrong with having right. a wall, a barrier in some instances. And it may be the case that there are Democrats who want to make a deal, mm-hmm. but the leadership in the Senate, Charles Schumer, Chuck Schumer, and then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, are so eaten up with hatred for Donald Trump, they refuse to negotiate. We're going to see how this plays out. The president's obviously trying to get this to work out for the sake of the workers who were furloughed mm-hmm. in the federal government. Democrats don't seem to care about them, nope. and they don't seem to care about the DACA and the Dreamers DACA deferred action on
and the security of our border.
And the security of our borders. So we're going to find out, and this looks like it's going to go on for a while longer, and we will continue to cover it. Anyway, 5-minute break for news, folks. We'll come back with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.